Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guests this week are a father and his two sons, who are from Midland, Michigan, and they own Fabiano Brothers, Inc., which was founded in 1885 and the largest beer wholesaler in Michigan. They sell beer from 55 breweries, offer 700 packages, and service 6,500 accounts with 14 million cases of beer a year. Their names, Jim Fabiano Sr., Joe Fabiano, and Jim Fabiano Jr. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Jim Fabiano Sr. and his two sons, Joe and Jim Jr. Dad, let's go back to 1885. 134 years, the Fabiano Company is created. What happened?
Well, let me make a statement first. Thank you for inviting us to be on the program. It's an honor and a pleasure to be with you, Jack, and we've known you for a while, and you're a pleasure to be around. Before I go to 1885, I just want to say something. If my grandfather hadn't have contacted the Strawberry in 1923, we would not be in the beer business. We wouldn't be having this program. My dad and uncle sat across each other at a partner's desk for over 30 years, and they had a great working relationship. And if they ever had a problem, they discussed it there, and they left it there. They had that partner's desk built. We still have it in our corporate offices today. And I've told our sons that if they ever have a serious problem, that they have to go sit at that partner's desk and get it resolved before they leave.
Now, when you're at home with Lee and there's a disagreement, is there such a thing as a partner's desk with you and Lee?
Yes, and she sits in the higher chair, and I just say whatever she says, I agree with. That's why we've been married well over 50 years. My grandfather had a cantina. He raised his family in Calabria, Italy. And in this cantina, they sold fruits and confectionaries, and he made wine in the lower level of the cantina. And all the kids, there were eight children, had the opportunity of working there at one time or another. And most of them were crushing grapes. My grandfather would go around and collect grapes from growers in the area in Calabria, and they would crush the grapes, and he would make the wine, and he would sell it out of his cantina. Moving forward, my grandfather came to the United States in about 1899. He made a trip over by himself. He worked in the pasta houses when they were building the railroad, and he stayed for several months and made some money and went back to Italy. He didn't come back to the States until about 1908 or 09. He worked for a few months, but his main reason to come over was to start all the paperwork so he could bring his whole family to the United States legally. And he got everything put together. They didn't make the trip until 1911. They sailed out of Naples, Italy, and they arrived in New York. And my dad, of course, none of them could speak English except my grandfather. And my dad said he can remember seeing the Statue of Liberty, and it had a big effect on the whole family. Well, they came through Ellis Island, made their way to Lansing, Michigan, and he first went to Eaton Rapids and then spent a year there and then a year or so and then came to Lansing, set up a fruit store in 1915. in Lansing, and he was selling, making wine, going to the Eastern Market, making wine, and selling it until Prohibition came in 1918. During 1918, he had his oldest daughter was in Mount Pleasant, and she had four children, and she and her husband passed away from the flu epidemic that hit the world, and they left four children. So my grandfather moved from Lansing with his family, left one daughter to run and her husband to run a store in Lansing, another daughter running a store in Stockbridge, and then they went to Mount Pleasant to raise the four children. One of them died 3 weeks after they were there, and he raised the other children, his own children that were left at home, and three children at a fruit store in Mount Pleasant. But he'd go down to the Eastern Market and every week and get fruit for the markets. Prohibition came in 1918, and he couldn't make wine anymore. So he and one of his trips to the Eastern Market in 1923, he stopped by the Stroh Brewery and to find out if he could sell Stroh's near beer out of the fruit stores. And they gave him permission and gave him two counties in central part of Michigan to sell Stroh's near beer. And that's what put us into the beer business. If my grandfather hadn't have started at the Stroh Brewery and done that, we wouldn't be in the beer business.
And then Grandpa, in 1933, cut a deal with Stroh's to distribute regular beer in mid-Michigan when Prohibition was over.
Well, actually, my grandfather passed away in 1930. My father and my uncle were going down picking up fruit for the fruit stores. Prohibition was repealed. They got their first load of beer because the Stroh Brewery was trying to take care of their customers in Detroit. They would have had to wait a week or so. So they had a contact at the Rheingold Brewery in Chicago, and they went and got a load of Rheingold beer. There was a driver and my uncle and my dad that brought the 200 cases back, the first beer to come to Isabella County. And that would have been 1933.
Dad, when you went to work for your dad, Joseph, and your uncle, Frank, what's the biggest thing you learned from each of them?
Well, they were interesting people. My uncle was kind of the inside person that took care of the books and everything. My dad was the outside guy, the marketing sales. And they believed in hard work, love of family, love of community, but there's nothing that you can't do if you're physically and mentally able. And they just stressed hard work, being at it every day, being good with your customers, good with your employees. And I think that that's served us well. We've had one employee that worked for us 53 years. We've had several employees work for us for over 40 years. So I think that treating people the way you would want to be treated is probably the best thing that they could have taught me.
We've been listening to Jim Fabiano Sr. When we come back, we're going to hear from his two sons. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, a News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Jim Fabiano Sr., who's affectionately known, at least by Gretchen Pretty, as The Rascal. So, The Rascal, you become president in 1977. Jim, paint for us a picture of the business as it existed then.
My uncle had just passed away in 1977. And my father became chairman of the board, and I became president. Anheuser-Busch was just starting to come on in the early to mid-70s, and we had a fairly good-sized territory in the central part of Michigan. And Stroh had been our number one brand, and Anheuser-Busch took it over. And our company was probably 30 employees, if that. Couple hundred accounts, 300 accounts, 400 accounts. Big change. Big change was coming, and our product line became, it started growing quite fast in the late 70s and the 80s, and we really expanded that time of our history. And we purchased a couple other locations. Grayling, Michigan, there was a distributor there we purchased. We purchased a couple of wholesalers that were in Mount Pleasant. So we had expanded quite a bit during the 80s. And then in 1991, we bought a market that was much bigger than us in Saginaw, Michigan. And that really expanded our size of the company.
Okay, we're with Jim's two sons, Joe and Jim Jr., on this Father's Day weekend. Joe, what's the biggest thing you've learned from Dad?
Well, first of all, thanks, Jack, for having us. I think the biggest thing I've been able to learn from my parents is they've always led by example. Definitely the integrity that you have, the values you bring to the table, treating your employees like family, taking care of your customers. But as I said, my father's always led by example, and that's through hard work. And just being able to mirror his work ethic, and as we got more involved with the company, it's just he's always been a great example to both Jim and I.
Jim Jr., what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom and Dad?
Well, first of all, thanks, Jack, again, for having myself and my brother and my father on. It's an honor. Mom always said to us, things happen for a reason. You know what? Things always do happen for a reason. And Dad, you know, when I first got into the business, he always said to me, you always want to do a lot of walking around. You want to walk around and manage by walking around, asking a lot of questions, observing things going on within the facilities. And one other thing that was very important that he said to myself is always surround yourself with smart, hardworking people. People that can help you get to where you want to take this business. And I've followed those philosophies and what he's told me over the years, and it's worked out quite well for us.
In the late 90s, the three of you take over running of the business. And Joe, you're a lawyer. How has the company's phenomenal growth occurred?
Well, as the beer industry has evolved and the domestic beers kind of plateaued and the craft explosion became more prevalent in the early 2000s, in our business, like many industries, the way you grow is through acquisitions. I believe my father kind of laid out some of the time frame there of some acquisitions over that past decade and a half. After we made acquisitions, it allowed us to expand our territory, expand our volume, and grow through acquisitions.
Jim Jr., you're the sales and marketing side. Paint for us a picture of the company today, please.
The company today, volume-wise, is quite a bit bigger than it was back in the 90s. Joe and I put our first acquisition together in 2005, and from that point on, the two of us decided that we were either going to get much, much bigger, or we were going to get out. And thank God that my father, back in 91, it was like he said to me, it was like the minnow swallowing the whale when we took over the Max True Company in Saginaw, Michigan. But since 2005, we've probably grown the company from about 5.5 million cases, to where we presently at about 14 million cases. And that is, like my brother said, through some different acquisitions throughout the state, coming down in here to the Detroit market, and making an acquisition over in Wisconsin, the central part of Wisconsin, in Wausau, Wisconsin. And I trying to do what we know best, and that is, you know, focusing on the beer industry and the beer market, and growing our retail account presence. We currently service about 6,500 retail accounts. We run 90 to 100 delivery vehicles on the road each day. We're receiving 30 to 50 inbound loads a day. We have 80 to 100 sales reps calling on accounts out there. We're, you know, about 98% of the product that goes out comes back to us in some type of recycling, where we're recycling 27 million pounds of glass is processed each year, 4.8 million pounds of aluminum processed yearly, 600,000 pounds of cardboard and plastic wrap processed yearly, and we're doing all that out of approximately 600,000 square feet of warehouse facilities between the two states and approximately 550 employees between the two states.
And you service from down in Melvindale all the way up to Gaylord and also in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yeah. Mackinac Island, too.
Joe, a lot of times when I meet an entrepreneur whose son gets into the same industry, there's a competition between the kids and the old man. I don't get that sense with you guys at all. You're like your friends to each other. You really respect each other. How so, Joe?
You know, Jack, I think I'd have to give the credit to my father and, again, laying out that example. He has been one to always be there to not only guide us, but provide us that historical perspective and that institutional knowledge. One of the things that I think with my brother and myself that we try to do when we're both in the office on the same day is usually we both arrive fairly early before the rest of the staff gets there. And we always try to get each other up to speed. We grab a cup of coffee. I usually come down to Jim's office or he comes into mine, and we just make sure we're on the same page. I think that when, you know, not when your owners and the family is on the same page, it's such an easier message to transition to the employees, to staff. So, you know, with that, our success is really attributed to a lot of our communication between the three of us. And my father always making sure that, you know, while we're in the office, we're talking business, but at the end of the day, it's about family and making sure, you know, when we leave that office, that we're family first.
No business discussed at the dinner table.
So, you talk about 500-plus employees, Jim. How do you go about propagating that strong culture amongst these 500 people?
Lead by example. Lead by example and show a nice, hard work ethic. Make right decisions. Get them to buy into our philosophy.
We're talking to the Fabiano family, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Jim Fabiano Sr. and his two sons, Joe, Jim Jr. Joe, 80% of family businesses fail after the first generation. The Fabiano brothers are now in the fourth generation. That's like less than 1% make it to the fourth generation. How have you guys done it?
Well, Jack, it's like we talked a little bit previous, I think, communication between my brother and I, relying on my father for that historical background information to make sure we're all on the same page. As you said, it's family businesses are so difficult to transition down. And Jim and I, with the fifth generation now, starting to get to an age where we'll be in the next few years transitioning them in, it's a big obstacle. But I think with steady, fast planning and, you know, making sure that everything is fair and equitable from the family standpoint is the way to make sure you can transition that business down to the next generation.
Tomorrow is Father's Day. And Jim, you're a dad. You have four daughters, two sons. Joe, likewise, two daughters and three sons. I used to listen to the late, great Robert Schuller every Sunday, Hour of Power, Crystal Cathedral, Garden Grove, California. You know, a possibility thinker's creed. And Joe and Jim, he would often say that the number one thing a dad can do for his children is to love their mom. Joe, why so?
Well, again, you want to provide that foundation for your children. My wife, Michelle, I've been married with her over 20 years, five healthy, beautiful children. Showing the children, you know, that relationship you have with your spouse, the communication that you bring to the table, that you can work out any issue that the family faces. You know, that's what life is all about, family. Business is great, and it provides for our family, but that that relationship that you have at home, that's what's most important.
Junior?
Jack, you know, Joe and I at times think that we have a tough job, but I think that our wives have the hardest job, and that's raising their children. It's constantly something, an issue, something going on at school, something going on at home, you know, the drama. For what they have to do, you know, Joe and I are very lucky that we have our spouses who are great role models, great teachers, and they rule with an iron fist, which you have to nowadays. You know,
and they keep us in check.
And they keep us, absolutely. Joe's absolutely right there.
Dad, whether we're together in Palm Beach or whether we're together in your office in Midland or here at WJR, you're like in love with Lee. It's like you're two teenagers in love, madly in love, after decades. How so?
Well, I'm very fortunate that I have a very great person that I'm married to. We've been married a long time. You know, we used to go shopping together when we had the kids were young, the grocery store, and I'd always go right over to the beer section and start turning labels of our brands so people would see them. And it's so funny, to this day, when my wife, because she'd always watch me, when she puts some sodas or beer in the refrigerator, she turns the labels. So, you know, we're attached. We've been together doing everything, raising our family, being involved with our grandchildren for over 55 years. So we're just very, very fortunate people. And I have a great, 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 great spouse.
And is it true that for the competitors' labels, you turn them so that there were no labels?
Well, every once in a while, one would fall off the shelf or something. No, we've always been had a lot of integrity in our business.
Jack, that's funny that that my dad brought that up. When Kelly and I go into a grocery store, first thing she says to me, "Well, I guess I'll see you in a while. I know you're going right to the beer aisle to take care of things." And I'm like, "Yeah, you know me."
Okay, Dad, if there's a parent tonight, a father tonight, listening, that's abandoned his kids, and he's thinking, what do you tell that father?
Well, the first thing I'd tell the father is that he has to recontact and reconnect with his wife, and he has to set up whatever type of mutual loving relationship they can have for the betterment of their children. Now, if they can't live together, that's understandable at times, but they have to be able to be loving for their kids' sake and communicating and making sure that their kids are on the right path.
Dad, speaking of the right path, if there's a mom or dad listening tonight who's got a son or daughter that's on the wrong path, the prodigal child, be it son or daughter, what do you say to that parent?
Well, you just have to say you've got to be there for them, and you've got to love the child. I mean, love will conquer a lot of things in this world. They've got to be there and love their child.
And Jack, that spouse has got to like themselves first, learn to love themselves, and that way they can then show their love to their spouse.
Speaking of love, every year the Super Bowl ads, you know, used to be 500,000 a minute, then a million, 2 million, prices go up, you know, and they always have contest. What was the best ad the next morning? And universally, the Budweiser ads are always If there's the four best, the Budweiser's got two of them. Joe, how is that and why is that?
Well, our main supplier, Anheuser-Busch, loves to invest into the Super Bowl. And when they put their media behind it and their creative behind it, you know, they come up with some creative stuff. I remember the What's Up ads back in the, early 2000s. That still resonates with me and a lot of people that I see on the streets today. So they continue to think that's such an important segment to be in front of those 100 million people. And it's a chance in one night to get that brand out in the mainstream market.
Talk to us about the Clydesdales and the Dalmatian.
Beautiful teams, the Clydesdales. Absolutely wonderful. We've had them in our market a few times, and it's amazing the size of those animals. They are enormous, and they are so well-trained and well-taken care of that it is, it's just, we're proud to be affiliated with the Clydesdales. And the Dalmatian, who cannot love a Dalmatian? They always, the Dalmatian's always sitting right up there with the drivers.
When we moved into our corporate facility in Bay City in 2009, we had the team up there for about a week, and they camped out right in our parking lot. And I think that they said we had about 20,000 people come through in a few, 2 or 3 days, and they walked through our facility, and we had food set up, but people loved the horses. They're just tremendous to be around.
Dad, speaking of the food, what did the horses eat?
Well, they fly in the food from St. Louis. They are on a very controlled diet, and they don't eat anything locally. They're treated very well.
Boy, earlier this week, speaking of St. Louis, they finally won the Stanley Cup. Imagine what those Clydesdales are going to do in St. Louis for the last few days. We're with Jim Fabiano and his two sons, Joe and Jim Jr., and I'm Jack Crisula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Jim Fabiano Sr., his sons Joe and Jim. They run Fabiano Brothers, which was founded in 1885, is the largest beer wholesaler in Michigan, supplying 500 packages to over 6,500 accounts. If you want to learn more, www.fabiano, F-A-B-I-A-N-O, brothers.com. Just remember Fabio, who had that long flowing hair until the duck hit him in the head, and no more Fabio. So, okay, July 4th. Coming up very quickly, largest, busiest day of the year. How much product will go out of that warehouse for that day?
Jack, we'll have some days where we'll hit probably 75,000 to 80,000 cases of beer will roll out of just the Bay City operation. And that'll, between the Bay City and Detroit operations, with our cross-dock in Petoskey also included.
Dad, a couple weeks ago, June 6th, we celebrated the 75th anniversary of D-Day. You and I were raised by the greatest generation. Mom and dad, uncles, aunts, the Little League coaches, the neighbors. Tom Brokaw wrote the book, The Greatest Generation. What made him so great?
Well, I think that probably growing up in the times they did through the Depression, and then pulling together to go to a war to a foreign land and taking 18, 19, and 20-year-old kids that had never been out of this country. I watched a lot of the specials, especially on C-SPAN, about Omaha Beach and that day. And they talked with a lot of the veterans, and these kids were 18 and 19 years old, and they had never been shot at. And they were getting out of these boats and running on shore, and their friends are being shot left and right. You know, it just makes you emotionally feel that these people were giving their lives for us. And all these kids that didn't return. And I listened to President Eisenhower's speech when he went back for the 20th anniversary in 1964. And he walked around and looked at the gravestones, and he said, you know, I have grandchildren. He was talking with Walter Cronkite, and he said, I have grandchildren. And he said, these people died and never had grandchildren, but they died so I could live and we could live and we could see our grandchildren. Now you think about that, it's been 75 years. And these people are still telling these amazing stories. I hope that our history books never forget that these people left our safe shores and went to a foreign country and fought to preserve the world and not conquer the land, and came home to give us our liberty.
That was phenomenally said. Joe, Jim, Dad is a modern-day version of the Greatest Generation. And one of the many things he's taught you is to give back. Talk to us about giving back, Joe.
Absolutely, Jack. I think one of the things that my father did early on was start a family foundation. And that's allowed us over the years to give back to the communities we service financially. I know he set an example with us to not only give our treasures, but to give our time. I know for both Jim's family and my family, we're both very active within our children's schools, our parishes, as well as many nonprofit and colleges in the area. It's so very important to do that, to set that example, not only for our children, but for other people. And, you know, it's such a blessing, especially, you know, for Jim and I, and so relevant on Father's Day weekend, where Jim and I, we get to interact and see our father several times a week. And, you know, with that, he's always told us about giving back, and that's one of the things we always make sure we try to do.
Dad, from 2002 to 2006, was on the board of trustees of Central Michigan University, Jim. And actually, you go there, and there's a Shalani Hall for the wine, but a Fabiano Hall at Central Michigan University.
Yes. When did we do that? When did we? Do you remember that year that we did that, Dad?
Well, it's going to be back around 06.
Yeah. No, that was something that my father and I both graduated from Central Michigan University, and that was a very nice gesture that that my father and Tom Chalani did by donating the finances to help build those beautiful dorms that we get calls each spring. We have a child going to Central Michigan in the fall. Any chance that you can pull some strings and get him into the dorm? We're like, you know, that's an upperclassman dorm, and the athletes all like to stay there, but eventually we can figure it out.
Dad, you're 75. You're a very young, spry 75, and you come to work 3 to 4 days every week, and you just walk the floors. Why do you keep doing that?
Well, I think the example that my father and my uncle gave me. My father was at his desk till he was 87 years old. He did have some cancer. He went into the hospital and died 30 days after leaving his desk. I still have his calendar that he turned.